for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back with a bumper show of Non-League Football. Despite the season finishing for the majority of clubs, there's so much to talk about. And I'm pleased to say that I'm joined this week by stalwart of the show, Mr. Dave Anderson. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening.
And are you enjoying a week off after winning the title in the combined counties premier?
Yeah, we played Tuesday, which was our last league game. We beat our local, our derby rivals, if you like, Galby Rangers. Yes, and we had the trophy given to us on the Saturday, which is always nice. You know, it's, I've been doing it a long time. You don't get to pick up that many trophies, so it was a good day. And the Coaching Horses, the local pub, I think the owner's gone to Benidorm for a fortnight after the semi-final and now this. So, yes, all good, and we've a little bit of time off, and we've got our schedule now sorted completely for between now and
for a little game you've got.
Yeah, that game, I keep thinking I'm going to Vale Farm, which is where Wembley FC play, you know. Yes, but we've tried to go about it. I've spoke to a lot of people from levels above. I've spoke to people who've played at Wembley. I've tried to take on as much knowledge and structured into a schedule that takes you there ready to play, and then whatever will be, you know. And I'm sure Kevin has done exactly the same thing for Cray. And it's funny, I remember when we did the semi-final shows, I sort of says, well, hopefully I'll be shaking your hand. So it's worked out, I will be, you know.
And is there a buzz about the club? Is everybody bouncing off one another? Not literally, well, they probably were after the winning the title.
We've had a few nights we've been bouncing. It's been an incredible story. And, you know, let's get this out early. You know, I'm the figurehead of it, you know. So when it's like it is now, you know, everybody looks at the manager and goes, yeah, brilliant. But listen, you're around, you work at a football club, you know, I'm one little cog in a big machine. And there's lots of people, you know, my staff, my medical staff, who are the best, you know, my assistant managers and coaches, you know, my medical, Gary Anderson's just got a bronze Olympic medal. Realistically, he should be a physio in professional football, but he's retired and sort of for his sins worked with me for another year because he was at Hendon with me a long time ago. All that stuff then, the Dave Rayner, Mark Turner, you know, loads of people. So I don't want to make it sound like the Dave Anderson show, but it's an incredible story, you know, from walking in there with probably 10 games to go last year. I can't remember how many, but in a relegation position. The pitch was shocking. The dressing rooms needed condemned. We'd four players at the first training session. The two gates, paying gates, which I was told last week, the two paying gates previously before I took over, was 11 and 19. And we're now getting up around 300. And we had close to 2,000 for the semi-final. We've won the league and we're in the FA Fast Final. So as years in football go, it's been okay. You know, it's a real, and as I say, I mean, that's the whole club, you know, and there's success stories everywhere. Not everybody's got a big mouth and is on a radio show where they can publicise it, but that's our success story. And I don't apologise for it. I just don't want people to think it's the Dave Anderson story. It's Chertsey Town story.
Well, it's an interesting story because the people that we're going to talk to in the show, it's all about, it's a very busy time of year with the playoffs. And speak to Dave Richardson at the Non-League paper about the playoffs and some that haven't taken place yet and how they've, how they've organised. But I think what this week's show is going to enlighten people with is that football never stops. No. And, you know, everybody talks about the close season, but you still got games to go. But even those clubs that have not got any games to go, it's organising pre-season, it's organising reseeding of the pitch, getting the players in. Yeah. And we're here from clubs. Well, yeah, non-league's all about building clubs, building communities, building reputations. And they're so easily knocked down. And you've already mentioned the great team that you've got behind you. And I think that's what is going to come out of this show, is that non-league football is all about the team.
Yeah.
It's on and off the field.
Yeah, it is. And listen, you can work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can knock your pan out with your team and you can still be crap. you know, for want of a better description, it doesn't guarantee anything. What you have to do is you have to do, that's the minimum requirement, is you have to work hard, because everyone around you is doing the same thing. I've been fortunate where the people who've got involved are very, very good at what they do, and that leads to success. But I think that you nobody gets success lazily, you know. And listen, when you work hard and you've got everything in place and you get on the right people, you still need a bit of luck. You still need things to go your way. You still need people in your division to have a bad day. You still need to win on a penalty shootout. You need all that to happen to you. And that's the one thing I bring. I'm lucky. I'm a lucky guy, you know. But yes, it's and when you look at this time of year and people are getting ready to go to the beach, managers are planning pre-season. They're trying to work out who's staying, who's going, who's topping their players up, whose players they're topping up. In fact, this time now, from now to pre-season, I said, if you ask managers, this is probably amongst the busiest times, you know, proper non-league. This is as busy as it gets.
Now, a few weeks back, we reported on the decision of Paul Doswell to take a sabbatical from his managerial role at Tottenham United. And last week, the decision to step down from the Surrey club, citing travel as a major deciding factor. As somebody who themselves seems to live travelling up and down the M3, I feel his pain, but knowing his passion for football and the people involved at non-league, I have to say, I wasn't then surprised to hear that he'd taken a new appointment this week, a bit closer to home. To tell us more, welcome back to the show, new manager at Havant and Waterlooville, Paul Doswell. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you, Tim. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Amit. Hi.
Now, it's I've got Dave Anderson alongside me, who obviously retired once from football and came back into management, has now, you know, sort of won some sort of title, as you know, going to Wembley, FA Vars final. Is football management something that, once it's in your blood, you can't live without it?
I think it's just football. Obviously Dave and myself played, and The second best thing to play in is still being involved, and that's whether it's a coach or a manager. So, you know, I think I started playing football at 7 or 8, as we all did, and about 53, I'm still involved in it. And, you know, I owe football a lot because it's a big, big part of my life, and I'm lost a little bit without it, I suppose.
And to be fair, Doz, I mean, 11 unbelievable years at Sutton. I mean, I remember going to Sutton back before you took over, and always a big club, but, you know, but you took it to a different level in that time. So I suppose, Mike, you know, I didn't know how to word the question, so I'm just going to say, why have you gone? There must be more than one reason, but just to give you some time to express it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a decision that's been coming really just this season. You know, I've driven the club forward every year for 10 years, and in the 11th season, the playoff semi-final defeat against Bournemouth was playing heavily on the mind, because the reality is, Dave, if we had gone up, I was actually really concerned that we put the club into financial trouble, which was the last thing that I wanted to do. Knew that taking the pitch up and putting a new grass one down in essence took away all of the solidarity payment of the £900,000. And then you had to employ a chief executive, which would have been about 80 grand a year. You know, you had to have at least two other full-time staff. And when I looked at how our club was set up, you know, I felt I was almost leading it into a real problem. So that sort of bothered me the whole summer. Mm. I couldn't quite get my head around how to solve that issue, because, you know, this football club, and I'll still say this because I'm going to, you know, be their biggest fan for forever.
Sure.
Is that they're a brilliant, National League non-league club. And that was always our aim, was to be the best non-league club we could be. And I think we were achieving that, you know, and more with the budget that we had. But onwards from that, it was, you know, I suppose it was that sort of not understanding where I could continue to take the club that sort of started to fester in my mind. And then, you know, it became less enjoyable travelling up three times a week. It took me 4 hours, 2 hours there, 2 hours back. And also every evening game, you could guarantee the M3 would be sharp. Yeah. It would take myself and Birdie, you know, sometimes 3 hours to get home from Sutton, getting in at doors at 1 o'clock in the morning. And unfortunately, it became less enjoyable to the, you know, to the point where, you know, I just decided that I'd have a break and just see if I, you know, could come back, because I wanted to. That was the original aim. But to be honest, 2 or 3 weeks into the break, I didn't miss the travelling, you know, one bit. And the one thing I would miss is football, and but not the travelling. And unfortunately, I let Bruce know that, you know, I just couldn't face the travel anymore. And I made it clear to clubs down here that I was available if it was within sort of half an hour of my doorstep.
Yeah, and that's worked out well. I mean, they must be going to church every Sunday night, haven't you know? Because that's worked out brilliant for them to have it in Waterlooville for you to fall on their right. doorstep. And I know Ian Bird's gone with you.
We both live in the same street, myself and Ian. You know, so haven't no more than 25 minutes from here. And what people won't know is I actually played for them. I played for the chairman, believe it or not, wow. Derek Pope. So I think I had 2 seasons there. They got rid of me, sold me. but it's a club I know very, very well, and I've always respected, you know, Derek. Without Derek Pope, there is no having a Waterlooville Football Club. It's as simple as that. And I've known him for a long, long time. I've always respected him. Really good guy. And, you know, when he rang me on the Sunday, came up to see me on the Sunday after he'd let Lee go on the Saturday. And I had other options, to be honest. I had 3 or 4 other clubs that I was talking to. But Derek came up to my house and asked if he'd come here on the Sunday up to Winchester. And we had, I don't know, I think it's 4 hours together on the Sunday. And when he left, I was pretty, you know, I couldn't have got a better club in terms of how restricted I was, you know, in what I wanted to do myself.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, I've just wrote down here when you were talking, love football, hate travel. I think we all fall into that bracket when we get to a certain age. And I think people...
That's the other thing. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah, and I think people, whilst they might think they understand it, I think unless you've done it, you really don't understand it. It takes an awful... I mean, management, when it's around the corner from your house, takes a lot out of you. But maybe you could enlighten us a bit more about the fatigue that goes with it, with the travel.
So, I mean, to be honest, I said, you know, and Kate sat next to me now, listening, it was literally getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning, three, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, getting up to something, sometimes for 9, sometimes half past 9. That's when I really enjoyed it. So as soon as I got out of the car and met the players and on the pitch, I loved it. And then leaving Sutton at 2 o'clock to get back here at 4, 4.30, invariably caught in some sort of traffic, and then coming home and feeling absolutely shattered. And you've made a great point. I think when I was in my 30s and 40s, I didn't even think about it. But now I've hit my 50s. Unfortunately, diabetes has kicked in for me a couple of years ago, so that's affected my health. I've got to eat at the right times. And, you know, unfortunately, my family, you know, some 2 members of my family passed away from diabetes in the old days. So, you know, I was coming home and I was just shattered, and I had nothing left to give to the kids and the family. And she just said to me, look, you're killing yourself. And if you're not careful, you know, I can see you're not enjoying it. And sometimes I think your partner knows you the best. And, you know, she was bang on, really. So, you know, it took me a long time. You know, it's almost the whole season I was thinking about it. It took me till March to sort of even take the break. Mm. But what we'd done again, Dave, we were 3rd, 4th, and 5th the whole season.
Yeah.
Well, I saw the same problem coming up again this season as what had happened to us last season. How can you describe being in the playoffs as a problem? you know, but ultimately, in a strange, strange way, it sort of was a problem. Mm. You know, rather than bring new players in and try and keep pushing for it, we actually had to let players go. You know, it was done for budgetary reasons, but ultimately it was also done to, you know, to keep the club in a safer place as possible.
Well,
you know,
I think
it's never aware. You know, the players have been unbelievable up there for me for 4 years. Yeah. They've always wanted to get promotion, and if we had done, we'd have taken it. But it's just knowing, because I care about the club and its finances, I was always privy to what that could have meant.
Yeah, no, I think you know, it'd be wrong of us to, you know, and we respect the amount of time you've had at Sutton, but your new challenge now, you're around the corner and a big club in its own right, and I've just, you know, players, the team, the pre-season, tell me your list of what's first and what have you done since you've got the job?
Well, I don't start getting paid till July the 1st, but I started work on the Monday.
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, you know me well enough, I'm like a whirlwind. So I've gone in there, they've got so much right at Havant, but they've also got 10% of it that's so wrong. And I'm one of these people, I go in, I say where I think they can improve and where they should improve. And that's, you know, for example, you know, even looking at the infrastructure for things like the club website and the Twitter account and the media. And so my first couple of weeks has been, you know, putting my mark on what I think they can improve on. And they've been brilliant again. They've said that, you know, you come in and tell us what you think we should do.
Yeah.
And then, you know, within that 2 weeks as well, obviously I've been on the phone to numerous players and selling them the project and selling them the dream. And, you know, and it almost instantly rekindles that enthusiasm that we've all got when you start a new job, you know. So it's, you know, it's been a very, very busy week. I think it's only a week or 2 weeks. I don't know what it is now. But, you know, Kate will tell you, I've been going down there, walking out the door here at 8 a.m. I think I got in at midnight the other night. So, you know, it's instantly non-stop. But also, I've had, you know, and rightly so, I've met the Sutton chairman here on Wednesday for a curry. I've cooked him a curry, and Adrian Barry, the vice chairman, came, and I needed to leave everything right with Sutton. That they knew, they know every little nuance, and you know, my biggest hope is that Sutton continued to progress and, you know, be the best National League club they can be.
And just on that point, I mean, they've appointed Matt Gray, who is no stranger to me as well, as you know.
I know you know him well.
I know him well, and, you know, I know he went in with you during the season. And what's your thoughts on that?
Dave, it's no secret. I thoroughly recommended him for the job. I felt that when he came in January, I think he's a superb coach, but he was itching. You know, and he just hadn't been given the opportunity. He was itching at nearly 40 to go into his first management job. And the more I saw him work with the players, the more I saw the respect the players had for him. I think it's continuity for Sutton as well. You know, it's not the normal merry-go-round of managers. That, you know, it's the same lot that normally apply.
Yeah.
Listen, at the end of the day, it wasn't my decision. No, far from it. But my recommendation to the board before I left was I felt he was more than ready to take the role on. He understands the football club, because that's so important. You understand the budget you've got, and that, you know, we're not funded by some wealthy guy. And one of my biggest achievements there, I feel, is that, you know, I've left it with very good, stable, deep foundations, and there's a budget there which is won't change that I've left. You know, everyone kept saying this, that, and the other about my input. That has reduced massively over the years because of what we've done with the 3G and other income streams. So, you know, Matt's got a good chance with a mid to lower, if not in the lower budget, but that's what we worked with.
Sure, and I think as well with Matt, and he's actually, he's promised me he'll come in here next week or the week after, depending on how and when we record. But I think he's one of them guys, Paul, that has been around. Anybody that's in the game knows him, but he's been under the radar a little bit because he's always been the number two or the coach. And so I think Sutton supporters will be surprised at how well he steps up. And to be fair, I know...
In the end, Dave, I tweeted yesterday, because I sort of half knew that the reaction would be muted because he's not a name. But I tweeted yesterday, great, I think what a superb appointment. Mm. Great fit for this football club, you know, and get behind him, because you don't, you know, no one knew my name 20 years ago when I started. No one knew your name.
Yeah.
So you've got to start somewhere. I mean, the fact that he started at a very, very good club, but he's got also a board, you know, which are magnificent. They'll support him. If he loses 5 on the bounce, they won't panic. You know, if he wins 5 on the bounce, they won't panic the other way. You know,
that's essential, though, Paul. I mean, in your first senior job, I mean, I had the same at Hendon with Ava Arbiter, God bless him. And I remember speaking to Bob Dowie, who had been at the club, but like you and Sutton, Bob had managed Hendon. And he says, Dave, you couldn't go to a better club for your first job. And Matt's fallen into that as well with the people at the club.
And I've made that point to him. Mm. You know, Dave, a lot of professional managers, and I've seen them, they lose 4 games and they're waiting for that knock on the door. And they almost become paranoid on the back of it. It's almost, it's not healthy, actually, how they're sort of led to believe it's all going to, you know, go wrong for them. And I said to Matt, you don't have to worry. This board will back you to the absolute hilt. And as you said, in your first job, that is so important to think that after 5 games, you're not going to get a normal chairman who's going to knock your door and say, right, you're out. And, you know, they are, you know, I've got to say, similar to your experiences at Hendon, Sutton United is a fantastic, fantastic football club with great people running it. And they're not lunatics. There's not one person in that board that's just not a normal Sutton United fan. And I thought the continuity was important as well. Matt knows all the players.
Yeah,
they're all going to stay, by the way. You know, Eastman, Buteyman, Kenny Davis, Jamie Collins, Dale Bennett. You know, they've got some good players up there. And what Matt's got to do is put his own mark on, which he will. He'll bring in three or four players, which we needed to, because we certainly couldn't score enough goals this year. We weren't lucky with our signings on the strikers. But if Matt gets a bit of luck, which we all need, you know, with the right couple of signings, you know, there's no reason why Sutton can't again be competitive next year.
Yeah,
it says a lot about you and non-league football and the football club at Sutton United. And again, I've known those guys for many, many years. It's proper non-league.
Yeah.
But what about your new project then, Paul? You mentioned project and trying to get players on side, but is Havant a sleeping giant? Can that go further?
No. I think that Havant are a suburb of a massive club in Portsmouth down there.
Mm-hmm.
But what they want to be is what Sutton were, which was, in the end, a well-run National League club. You've got a chairman down there who is relatively okay off, but not wealthy. He puts in his money to make up the deficits, the small, you know, I want that to be as small as it can be for him. But no, he wants to get in the National League. And what he said to me is, listen, you know, if we can get back in the National League and you ended up in the playoffs, you know, he said it'd be a dream of mine to go into League Two. Can they do it? Yeah, anyone in the National League can do it. I'm sat down watching Wrexham Eastleigh. I've just put it on pause for you guys. You know, anyone can do it in a given season. But the hardest job is getting out of the National South, because that's the job we've got in front of us. And I reckon it'll be the hardest National South for quite a few years, because, you know, you've got Billericay obviously still in there.
Yeah.
Woking could still be in there. You've got Aldershot that want to go straight back up. Maidstone with John Steele and Hacking, you cannot rule them out going straight back up. And I'd like to think people would look at Havant now and say, well, they've got every chance of going back up. So,
wow, you know, what a division. What a division that's going to be, by the way.
Yeah, but then you've also got your normals, Dartford, Chelmsford, Bath. And I'll tell you, the team that impressed me so much this year was Slough Town when we played them in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
You know, in two occasions we couldn't beat them. You know, it was 0-0 at our place and 1-1 at theirs, and they beat us on penalties. So I'm under no illusions, and nor will my players be, that when we go there it'll be nothing other than a tough season. But I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, I'll be apparent, I've got a very, very, very good Conference South budget, and if we went up, I've got a lower to mid-table National League budget.
Yeah, well,
the budget does allow me to bring in, you know, some good players, and it'll be mixing amongst some real good young players as well. So it's an attractive budget for this level, and it's an unattractive budget. If your chairman said to me, you've got to go up the following year, I'll say, well, give me another 10 grand a week and I'll see what I can do to it.
Talking about attractive budgets, then, what about the project? Are you able to attract players? Because you're more southerly, so are you looking at players that are south of London, or can you stretch a bit further?
No, I think, for me, there's a maximum that you really can drive, and that's an hour and a half tops. You know, but they're young men, so they're not back in the age of being 50 where it would be a problem. But the reality is, you need one car. You need a car share, because you can't drive it yourself. You can't drive up on your own, because it just becomes mind-numbingly boring. So the purpose is you try and get three or four players that know each other well, that get in the car together, and for the lads that we banter all the way down and banter all the way back. So there'll be four or five that will be still coming from the Kent, Essex, whatever it is, London area. And I'll sign a player from anywhere, as long as they've got a car partner, or, you know, it's within an hour and a half drive of the club. So it won't necessarily be younger players, but there's also some National League players that I like that live very close to Portsmouth that are currently travelling 2 hours, and they might see that as an opportunity not to travel.
That's, you see, I'm just laughing here, because that's why they've got it. That's why Havant and Warragul have got the deal, because to know that is everything. To have the knowledge of that is big, to know where people are and what they do. I mean, the thing I've wrote down here, and I suppose it goes back to, it's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday again, Paul, where you'd started to take Sutton to, not full-time, but that sort of way, hadn't you?
Well, it's a hybrid, if you like. That's what people are calling it now, and we're doing it at Havant. So when Derek came to see me on the Sunday, I said, look, I won't entertain it if it's the evenings, because I don't want to do evenings. It's not professional to do evenings at this level, or to give yourself a chance at the next one up. So he had to also, you know, gulp a bit. And it's not because it's more money, Dave. It's because it, realistically, of his current squad of 18. And the thing is with Derek, he loves all of his players. Mm. He's very loyal. And I'm saying to him, Derek, you might have to start with a complete clean slate because all 18 might work and might not be able to do it.
Yeah.
So he had to gulp and go, right, okay. I said, but if you want me to come in, do it properly, it needs to be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday mornings. It's going to be 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And that gives me the best chance and Bairdy the best chance to actually work with the players and improve the players. That's the biggest thing. To improve the younger players is massive for me.
And you know, it's something I never got the chance to do. And I think you're right. I mean, people think automatically that means loads of money. It just means you structure it different, you know. And I never, ever had the chance to work in daylight hours. And I think that that's a massive thing.
Well, I had 11 years at Sutton. The first three were doing evenings. So, and people forget it. Get this, the first three evenings, I was leaving Winchester at 3:30, but not getting home till midnight, so I was driving home in the dark for 3 years. Wow. That in itself, just driving at dark when it's pissing down with rain. Oh,
no, that's fine. All right. It's
we're not on the BBC anymore, we can do that.
Golden rain then, we're just having a chat here, aren't we? And I suddenly thought, I was just
It's your round.
ultimately, no, that's not good for you either. And
yeah.
Watching the players come in from a day's work and then train, it's not an impossible to get a good session out of them. And so, you know, for me, I changed it in year four, and that's when Sutton started to really progress. If you look at my progress at Sutton, it was really from year four onwards. The first 3 years, first 2 years, we were still stuck in the Ryman Premier. You know, it's a huge difference. And the other thing is, I say to all of my players, look, you should work. You know, you're not Premiership, you're not Championship. You know, work the 3 days with me, but go and work on a Monday, go and work on a Friday. And by the way, when you get home, go and work in the afternoons. You know, there's no reason, you can't actually do some work. They're only with me for actually probably 3 hours a day. So my view is good for young players, it's good for people in general to go out and work something other than football and, you know, actually experience the real world, which all of us have had to do.
Yeah.
Paul, it's been fantastic talking to you. We wish you well with the new project. I'm sure we'll speak to you in the new year and hopefully hear about all the good things going on that haven't.
Don't go, boy. It's Matty Gray's on the phone.
Is he? Tell him I've just said he's rubbish.
I will.
I just say that. See you a bit. All right. See you a bit, mate.
See you, boys. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Dave, there's a man that knows non-league, knows football, and, well, loves it.
Pioneering, it's a, you know, the stuff about, you know, there's so much come out of the interview if you listen to it, you know, and we've interviewed Paul a million times, but this is a bit different because he's moved clubs, and just how he sees the structure of training during the day was fascinating to me, and he's got the confidence to go with it. That's big, you know, to sort of try and restructure a club that's probably been Tuesday, Thursday.
It's got help when he's got the track record he's got. If you go to a chairman and say, look, this is it. If you want me.
But that's what you get. I albeit 100 leagues below him. I had the same thing when I went in at Chertsey. I knew I was going to go in and it was going to be, you're going to have to tick every box for me or it's not happening. Mm. So, Paul, you're not right. If you've been in football as long as Paul has and did what he's done, you have the right to go, this is a deal breaker. Because that chairman knows that if he doesn't get Paul Dawswell, there's a queue out the door waiting to speak to him next. So you've earned that right. You don't get to make them statements if you're rubbish. But I just think that beyond that, to be brave enough and believe enough that that's the way forward, and then to take it in and go, no, here's what I'm doing, is brilliant. And I can't wait to watch how they get on. And but as Matty Gray's on the phone to him now, who hopefully will be on with us next week. I was going to say to Paul, you know, I'm definitely going to get my backside down there next year to have a look at one of the games, you know, because it's a nice part of the world as well.
Yeah, we touched on there the division in National South next year. We've spoken about National North being so competitive this year. But, nice. I mean, another club that's gone up through the playoffs, Weymouth, big name. Yeah, I'm sure they'll have a decent budget. Mm. It's going to be a hard one to get out of.
Yeah, I think he's right. I think it's easy to say that. I used to think that the Isthmian League was the hard one to get out to get in the Conference South, but when you look at them now, they're all difficult. But when you look at the Conference South and what it can be next year, when he's reeled off them clubs, you go, my God, you know, pick a winner out of that. Mm. That's just proper teams and good people running them. Listen, I haven't even finished this season and I can't wait the next season. You know, it gives you that, the juices, you know, and it's definitely going to, I think next year is going to be massive at that level.
Now, our next guest is another returning to the show. The first time he was on with us, we spoke about the dramatic rise of the club, breaking records, slicing through the lower levels of the football pyramid. This season, they've had a consolidation until last week's announcement of a managerial shake-up and a new big name appointment on a big length contract. To tell us more and where he hopes his club will be heading next, he's chairman at Basford United, Chris Monroe. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Chris.
Good evening, Dave. Good evening, Tim. Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
well, it's always a pleasure to have you on, Chris. I still think there's a film in your tail, but it took another twist, a big shake-up. The old guard, the management, who served you well, they've been retained to support the new manager, who's former Nottingham Forest player Steve Chettle. How did all that come about?
Yeah, look, we had a really bad run of results, Tim, where we won one game out of 10 at the turn of the year, and a lot of it was really bad luck and ill fortune. And, you know, I'd like to really thank Martin and Mark, who really did a fantastic job for Basford United. But I just sensed that, you know, they didn't quite have the desire to see it through. So, you know, we looked to make the change. And, you know, we were delighted that we managed to secure the services of Steve Chettle, who's come in and will join an interim management team that actually went the last 10 games unbeaten. So we finished the season superb, and we're really looking forward to the new year.
And you say it's a tough season, but, I mean, just remind listeners of the rise that you've had in recent seasons. Yeah, a fairly quiet season until a few weeks back.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've achieved 5 promotions in 7 years to get us to the level we was this season, and you know, this season was all about consolidation for Basford United. But I think if you take out the December January, where say we won 1 out of 10, we would have comfortably been in the playoffs at the end of the season. We just missed out by 5 points.
Wow.
So it's just really staggering, really. But, you know, we're delighted for how the season's gone in the main. And, you know, we're looking forward now to a new challenge of moving the goalposts a bit higher next year.
And those goalposts, you know, being looked after by Steve Chettle, who until recently, I think, was in a job at Notts County. Former manager at Ilkeston Town, so knows the non-league game. But a local to Basford, was there previous connections with the club?
Well, Steve is a Nottingham lad, and obviously, actually, my son went to the same school as Steve's son, same age. So I've known Steve for many, many years. So we've plotted his progress through you know, through the last 10 years, really, and seeing how he's developed his career after finishing at, you know, professional level and then embarking on coaching and then managerial. So he was always the number one target for us, and we never advertised the position. As I say, we're delighted to get it over the line.
And a 4-year deal, I know that certainly attracts you some attention on social media. That's a big commitment from both sides. What's part of that 4-year plan?
I think what Steve wanted, he wanted, you know, his deal to match the deal of the club, where, you know, I've made it pretty clear what our objectives were. And I think, you know, 4 or 5 years, we want to be in the main conference. So really, it was just to show our commitment to Steve that, you know, we've got every confidence that, you know, he can be the man to take us on the next part of our journey. So, yeah, that was the reason behind the deal. But we've got a good track record of loyalty to managers. I mean, Martin was in the job for 7 years, so We do preach stability rather than change.
Yeah. As a football manager, I my eyes opened up, because the days of the sort of 4-year deals are, there's not many people chucking them around now, Chris. You know, but I've just put down here, is there a break clause in it for both sides if anything came in for Steve at a level above, or if things didn't go how you wanted it?
Yeah, I mean, we've negotiated an exit deal for both, which is in Steve's interest and ours. If it doesn't work, it's quite a long one. But as I say, we've got every confidence that unless Steve gets taken by a higher level club, that, you know, he'll do the job, and he's relishing the job that's at hand from a Basford.
Yeah, no, and I think that's, you know, it wasn't a trip up question. It was a genuine question, because I think that's just it's just it's perfect for both of you, because to chuck a 4-year deal on the table that hasn't got a break clause in it for both sides is madness. But to have something of that length, that means that Stephen going to the dressing room and look the guys in the eye. And some people in football now look at the manager and think, well, I can see you out, you know, if I don't fancy what you're doing, you don't fancy me. Yeah. Whereas I think that says absolutely the right thing. A manager needs power to walk into his dressing room, to organise his dressing room. And I think what you've done and how it's now structured and the ins and outs out of your business, but I think it's worth people knowing that there are ins and outs and clauses within it, because that's common sense. My big thing is, have you kept the staff on then with for Steve to come into, or has he brought his own?
No. Steve's going to work with the existing staff that finished the season so well, to be honest. And that was in the main Liam Hurd and Dom Romer. I mean, both these guys are 33 years old, and I think they've still got some good legs left in them for their playing careers. And it's just a perfect progression for them, because they're going to be mentored by Steve and they're going to learn off him. And, you know, we see them as future managers and coaches. So it's a good situation of stability, because, as I say, the existing management team that finished the season have stayed on, the coaching staff, backroom staff, everything. So we've just, you know, we wanted continuity.
Yeah, I that was part of when Steve came in. Was that part of what he had to take on, or was that something he took on himself?
No. I mean, Steve. You know, he knows of the club, because obviously he's been training at base for Notts County for a couple of years now. So he knows us very well. We know him. He knows how we operate. And as I say, he was just delighted to come on board, and we were delighted to get him on board. And there was never any discussion about bringing anybody else in, because, you know, he respects the people that's been in charge, and he knows them as well from playing careers. So, yeah, he's delighted. And I think, you know, already they look like they've got real good chemistry, and I'm very confident for the future.
I think it's Tim will have a couple more questions. I think it's deal of the century. I think it's brilliant on both parts. I think to get someone of Steve's recognition and what he's done and where he's been, and to get him in where he's committed for the length of time he has with yourselves is good business, Mr. Chairman, let me tell you.
Thanks, Dave. I hope it proves that.
Well, you can only, you know, listen, I was saying on the way in, I was talking to someone on the phone about, you know, supporters and other people in football who always pick the team at 5 o'clock, you know, when you can never get it wrong, you know. So we're making a decision here before the act, but I think on paper you'd go great business.
Thank you, Dave. Well, hopefully it works, and we're very confident.
Wait, you said you narrowly missed out on the playoffs this season, but dropping out and into your division next season, you've got clubs like FC United, Nuneaton Borough, that have got a proper track record. This division's not going to get any easier next season, is it?
It's a relentless division, Tim, this one. You know, we went to South Shields a couple of weeks ago, played in front of, I think, about 1,800, and we managed to get a draw out of them. And there's some massive clubs in this division. So I think, you know, I'm looking at Little Basford and say, 7 years ago we were playing on a park, and this year we've mixed with likes of Scarborough, Gainsborough, South Shields. So it's been an absolute journey, and it you're right, it won't get any easier next year by any stretch of the imagination, but we'll hopefully just take the good running to start the season next year.
You say Little Basford. I mean, you've obviously made a big appointment on the field, but off the field things seem to be going right as well. You've got, yeah, we spoke before about the structure that you wanted to get in place, and that's all appears to be going well. I see that, I think the academy are in a cup final. Even the vet side are doing well this season. There's a proper buzz. It's a proper football club, Basford.
Yes, Tim. Yeah, we, as I say, you know, we've got 25 junior teams, and as I say, we go all the way through from youngsters right through to vets. So, yeah, it's a real good feel factor in the club, and we don't lose sight of our roots. And as I say, one of Steve's attractions to us is because we actually feel he can really develop some of the younger talent to make bridge that gap to first team. So, you know, it's not just the first team that Steve's going to be involved in. He's going to work closely in the whole club with the academy. So it just was a perfect appointment for us.
And is he full-time with you, Chris?
Yes, he's on a full-time deal. So we'll be seeing a lot of each other. And you know, but as I say, this is the level that we're at now, where you have to have people full time positions. So, you know, no issue with it at all.
Yeah, we just spoken to Paul Doswell, who's moved in at Havant and Waterlooville, and brought in his philosophy of full time training. Is that something that the club might look at, where you're training in three mornings a week rather than in the evening, just to get a different sort of player and a different sort of dynamic with the players?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that is in Steve's objectives is the fact that, you know, within 2 years, we'd like to start developing a bit of a nucleus of a full-time playing staff. You know, and these might come from scholars released from pro clubs or from with our own within, but we do feel that, as I say, mixing with the teams that we're in, and certainly the teams in the Conference North, and that you've got to be looking to have some sort of full-time demand dynamics. So that's our objective.
And it's funny; it's exactly the same thing as Paul Doswell was saying. And it always makes me laugh, Chris, because 20 years ago people were saying that 92 full-time clubs was too many, and now we've got 192 full-time clubs. So it shows you people don't know. And I think it's the way forward as well. I think hungry and young and full time, you know, with the right people around it, is absolutely the way to go.
Absolutely, Dave. I mean, just today we were just talking about some of the budgets in the national, the Conference National North, and you know, you have to develop from within, or because you just can't stand a chance competing with levels that the money that's been thrown around. So we'll just stick to what we do and try and be successful along the way. But, you know, we're under no illusions that how difficult this is going to be.
A quiet season this year. Yeah, no promotion. So I don't know if you put a new clock up on the wall instead of a trophy or something like that. But what are the expectations next season? Has Steve got a season to sort of settle in and then try and go for it? Or is it, you know, playoffs or better next season?
Tim, we'll just take next season as it's come, because as you've just alluded to, the team that's coming down, there's some massive clubs. Yeah. You know, if we can get into the playoffs next year, that would be tremendous. If we don't, we don't. You know, I've just said to Steve, you know, every year we want to see a bit of progress. And it's not necessarily down to league position, it could be other players. So there's certainly no pressure coming from us towards Steve, because, as I say, we're in it for the long term.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just think long term we've got a great opportunity to get where we need to be. But there's going to be challenges along the way. So we'll embrace what happens.
And we'll embrace what happens there as well, because we'll certainly be following this story and hoping that Hollywood don't snap you up, and that we can retain the film rights and all live happily ever after together. But Chris, always a pleasure to have you on the Non-League Football Show. Enjoy the summer, and we'll speak to you next season.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Tim. Thank you, Dave.
Yeah, pleasure.
Dave, a chairman, we've spoken to Chris earlier on in the season, and every time you speak to him, he just seems, I think when he first came in, he was involved at the youth team level and then sort of got roped in. But he seems to be learning all the right things.
To be fair, I'm bored with the show already. There's too many sensible people on it. I want to let's get the FA on and talk about something where we can contradict them and sort of tell them what a bad job they're doing, because the two people we've spoke to tonight so far, I'm struggling to pick holes in it. It's good. And he's right. Listen, Steve Chettle mightn't work out. Might be the worst decision the club's ever made. It might be the worst decision Steve's ever made. But when you look at it, well, for what's in front of you, you go, wow, what a good marriage. What a good idea. What a good commitment from both of them. The break clauses and what's in the clauses within the contract are their business. And when I say their business, I mean the chairman and the managers. No one else's, but absolute sense. Same with Dawes, Paul Doswell, absolute sense. So, yeah, bored to tears, I'm at the minute. Get somebody on we can fight with.
So we've heard from chairman building clubs, managers building clubs, all about quick success. And what about a chairman who did all that, took his club into the top of the non-league pyramid, won the FA Trophy, and then stepped down, only to see his beloved club crumble in a matter of seasons? Now, Les Hare is back in the game, behind a reformed North Ferriby United, ready to take their place in Step 5 next season. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Les.
Many thanks indeed. Greatly appreciated, and lovely to hear from you.
Well, it's lovely to hear from you, and it's lovely to hear some positive news coming from North Ferriby, because obviously, we reported earlier on in the year about the demise of the club. Mm. And, yeah, fill in the background, Les. You stepped down from the original club. I think you thought you'd taken the club as far as you could.
Yeah, pretty much so. And obviously, I felt it was time to retire and obviously let other people, you know, sort of take on the reins. But I think best laid plans and all of those sayings that go with it, it clearly didn't materialise. And, you know, regrettably, despite an extremely successful history at the football club, the following three seasons, of course, just led to one demise after another. And I've just quite literally been having a conversation with a friend of mine, actually, to, you know, lament on the fact that it had actually bordered on ridicule in the end, which was extremely distressing. And I think the final straw for me, really, because to see such a wonderful football club be brought down to ridicule, I think, was really just the end. But it was at a situation where we couldn't do anything about it. And all that I could do was put a contingency in place to be able to resurrect it. And that's basically what I've done.
And you've done it very quickly as well. What was it like, though, when you were watching from afar? And I know you probably got certain abuse from some of the fans, because there's always fans that suggest that you walking away caused the problems. And yeah, there was nothing you could do. Was your phone ringing? Were people ringing you saying, look, can you come back? Can you do something about it? Or was it just your own sense of, this is your club, you wanted to do something? Is that why you're back involved?
Well, I think it's the latter, really, in the end. I've been in contact with a lot of people, and, you know, certainly over the last 3 years. It's extremely frustrating when you're watching from outside, because obviously it had passed over to other people, and it's somebody else's property. It's somebody else's, you know, game at that stage. You can't influence it in any way. And people have got to find their own way in life, haven't they? And people have got to, coming into a football club, have got to be able to actually either make it or break it, so to speak. But I think, you know, certainly in the end, I was getting calls from an awful lot of different people wanting to know what could be done and how it could be done. And there were so many things that effectively was wrong at the club, because nobody could undertake any proper due diligence. Nobody knew what the full extent of the debt was. And in the end, of course, nobody had a chance to do anything, because it got took into court and, as you well know, was wound up at the first time of trying.
Wow. Yeah, and I think for a very small sum, and I think that was the big news around the non-league world, was that, yeah, how can a big club like that disappear? But as I say, you've worked really quickly to get the club in its new form up and running. And I think you're talking from the ground now. There's a crowdfund been set up just to try and get the ground back up to standard so that you can play in step five next season.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, a couple of points you've raised there. I mean, let's first of all cover the situation with regards to the debt. Obviously, a company was sufficiently upset to be able to actually take the matter to court, and that was amount for £8,000. The total debt at the football club is materialising day by day, and at the moment, I think certainly, probably you can put a zero on that, because I think over 80,000 is probably nearer the mark. Now, from a point of view of actually resurrecting a football team, I'm a wily old person. I've been around 45 years in football. I know all of the rules, and I knew that if a football club after the 1st of March was to be wound up, there would be a 21-day period in which a new application could be made to the Football Association. And so, obviously, the plan is to have a contingency that would allow me to materialise a company and a club proposal completely backed up with an infrastructure and a forecast sufficient to be able to satisfy the Football Association that we were fit to be able to run a football club. And we did that within 14 days. And we had the full support of the local people within the village, the parish council and the trustees. Everybody that was involved were 110% behind me. And because of that and a fair wind, we've been able to get where we are right now.
Dave's already spoke. Our previous guests already on the show. They've already said this is the most sensible show that we've ever made. I think we've had people with sensible ideas and knowing the rules, knowing non-league, and then you come in and you know the rules better than anybody else, and it proves that you know sometimes in non-league you get a little bit of abuse, particularly those that follow professional clubs that you know think that they like to think we're a little bit Mickey Mouse, but there's some lovely people, intelligent people. And people that love football at this level, and I think Les, you've proven that there's a reason people like going and watch their local football team, and you've been able to resurrect that community spirit and getting people behind. There's a crowd fund that's launched, so people can help you get things off the ground. But how hands on are you going to be this time at the club?
Well, some things are better not changing, and if it's not broken, don't fix it. Unfortunately, I'm one of those people which it'll be 110% or nothing. I was up at 6 o'clock yesterday, and I left the football club at 10:45 last night. I had 14 meetings yesterday in total. I won't rest until we've got everything sorted. We've got an enormous amount of work to do. But, you know, the great thing is, actually, you just touched on it, it's all about people. Mm. I guess in the 4 years I've been out of the game, I've missed more than anything what I regard as the football family. And that's, you know, people up and down the country at other clubs. And what I think certainly is humbling for me is within a couple of days of that initial press release going out that I was getting back involved, I was getting messages from officials at football clubs up and down the country, which really, I mean, at one point actually brought both my wife and myself to tears, because it was just so, so emotional coming back to somewhere which you treat as home.
Yeah, and as you come back home this time, what lessons have you learnt from the last time you left home?
Well, I think obviously what I've said to people here is that a lot of them don't actually value what they've got until they lose it.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably more pertinent at this football club now than anything. What we're trying to instill now is that all of the ethics, what we spent 25 years in placing into the club in order to be able to take it on that wonderful journey that we went on, to be able to actually undertake it again, keep feet on the floor, and not allow the wrong people to get involved with the football club. And what I'm trying to do this time is make sure that when we set it forward, there's going to be nobody talking in terms of ownership, stakeholders, shares, anything of that nature. We're going to be not for profit. That's how we did it for 25 years. I'm going to do it that way again, and nobody's going to take anything out of this football club ever again.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, that is a lesson learned, and it's said with a tone that that it sticks in your throat, and I understand that. How far? Listen, this is the million-dollar question that you probably can't answer, but I've put down here, how far can you go this time, or doesn't that even bother you at the minute?
I can tell you it doesn't bother me in the slightest. The most important thing for me over the last 10 days has been we have 22 football teams, 20 of them involving children, 262 players. Every one of them is now safeguarded for playing football next season.
Brilliant.
We're not certain at this moment in time which division we're going to be playing in. That doesn't particularly matter for the senior team for next year at this stage. We will take whatever we are actually provided with. And we will start again. And obviously, I will maintain all of the same principles that we had before. And we'll just see where that journey takes us. You can't plan, I don't think, obviously, for success. I think at the end of the day, your squads of players, because of the type and the nature of the football clubs that you have, goes in peaks and troughs.
Yeah.
I remember somebody said to me just after we'd won at Wembley in 2015 about the meteoric rise of North Ferriby. I said I didn't see anything meteoric. It took me 25 years to go from the Northern Counties East League to take us through into the Conference. And really, I suppose, certainly, Wembley was a day I will remember for the rest of my life. And the interesting thing was, is that I think certainly for everybody connected with the club, it was one of those occasions which will always be there now, and it doesn't matter what's happened to the club. We started in Ferriby as a football club in 1919. Obviously not me personally, but the fact is, football started here then. And it's kind of poignant to think that here we are in 2019.
Yeah.
We're going back to North Ferriby Football Club. We're going back to the same name that it all started with. And people here can continue to enjoy football 100 years on.
It's brilliant.
We just want to make sure that it's there probably in another 100 years, you know?
Yeah, and Les, to be fair, when you mentioned the day at Wembley, I actually did the radio that day against Wrexham, if I remember right.
Indeed.
And you put custard pie over every pundit that day because everybody, including me, backed Wrexham wholeheartedly and the way the game started. You know, I felt the game was over after 20 minutes and it turned out to be one of them magical days at Wembley.
I think actually that just summed North Ferriby up as a club.
Mm.
I think, you know, a group of players who, I suppose, you know, I don't care, you know, everybody would talk about the difference between professionals and semi-pros and everything else, etc. But for me, we had a group of players at that time who were just sensational. They gave everything. Most of those guys had a full-time job. Some of them had children. Twice a week, the training. Twice a week, the playing. We're travelling the full length of the country. And every single one of them would give absolutely everything every single football match. And on that particular day, it made the difference because it was just passion. It was just absolute passion. And it took us over the line. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it was.
Well, you've seen your club lift the FA Trophy at Wembley. The chap sat opposite here, that Mr. Dave Anson, takes his side, Chertsey Town, to Wembley on National Finals Day in the FA Vase. Is there a chance of North Ferriby maybe lifting the FA Vase next season or going well in the competition?
I don't even know, in actual fact, obviously, whether we would get past the first round, to be honest, actually. I mean, yeah. I had the privilege of going to the final of the Vase at Wembley in 1997 with North Ferriby, and we played against an absolutely excellent Whitby Town that day and got beat 3-0. And, you know, funnily enough, it never dampened the day at all. We just felt that, actually, a club like ours going to Wembley on a national competition was just the whole deal.
Yeah,
that's what
that
was all about. The result became almost superfluous, actually, and even being beat 3-0 never dampened the spirits for anybody. But whether it can be done again, I mean, these things don't always tend to come your way in a lifetime more than once, do they? But I don't know. We'll give it a go.
You make your own luck, they say, don't they? And you summed it up there because you said, our club.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's come across in this interview, Les, and it's been fantastic having you back on the Non-League Football Show, is North Ferriby is your club, but the whole community's club as well. And it's great to have you back on in the football pyramid.
Yeah, we're delighted.
Well, thank you both very much indeed, actually. I mean, obviously, I'm absolutely delighted, really, that the response has been good. The sort of trust that I instilled, I guess, actually in people here, unfortunately didn't materialise. But the bottom line is that the trust that we had within the community did. And it doesn't seem as though anything has just happened in the last 4 years. People are all coming up with a smile on the face again. We've got a heart back in the club. And I just really want everybody to do what we had before and be proud of it. It's a community football club. Everybody earns it, and at the end of the day, actually, I think that's probably as much as I need to say.
Yeah,
and you've said it very well, Les. Thank you for coming back on the show, and we look forward to speaking to you again next season.
Greatly, my pleasure. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, we should be making this national curriculum for the school, shouldn't we?
Yeah, but you know, there's another thing that all wise words, but you know, when you think of the three interviews we've done, there's a real passion underlying everything that's said, and mostly with Les because of what he's watched and what he's had to go through, and not just him, but the whole setup, and the determination in his voice was as good as the story, and I'm absolutely delighted. It was one of them days. I thought I was there. I can't remember who we did the show with. I don't know where it was, Kaz or you were there, but I remember being at it and thinking, what a day this is to be here, you know, after the result. And as I say, every man and his dog tipped Wrexham, but it just shows you, you know, it's that's what cup finals are all about. I'm delighted for them, and I'm delighted that I'm in the FA Vars final this year, because that's another big team that's going to be difficult to beat next year, believe me.
Now, our next guest will be hoping that he can emulate some of the success of Chris Monroe and Bakersfield United. Indeed, his club may even be heading for an even faster rise through the pyramid. Back in the summer of 2014, Kevin Oakes and a few friends decided to start up a new Sunday football side. This summer, that club will be taking its place in step 5 of the football pyramid. To tell us more, welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Chairman at Welling Town, Kevin Oakes.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Good, Kevin. I mean, you must be great as well. I often get on my soapbox and shout out to all that will listen. Go out and support your local non-league side. You won't regret it. Now, you seem to have gone a step further and started one. Any regrets?
No, I really didn't think it would escalate this far, but obviously very pleased that it had. We've come a long way, and the club is unrecognisable from what it was 4 or 5 years ago when we began.
And obviously, you started out in Sunday football, but there was clearly a bit about you all, because you did quite well, and after two seasons, you switched to Saturday football. You joined the third division, I think, of the Kent County League. So what were you all doing before the club was formed?
It was just myself and a few friends that I go to Welling United with, my brother and a couple of other mates, and we just wanted to play recreationally in the park. For the first year, that's all it was. Most people were people that I'd been to school with, and you know, some of the players were good, and some of them were just making the numbers up, but everybody did it because they enjoyed it. And then, just being an ambitious person, really, after a year or two, I thought, you know, wonder how far we can push this. I was really enjoying it. Applied to get into the Kent County League. Really didn't think that we would have any chance at all. We'd never played on a Saturday. Didn't have a playing record. They're oversubscribed in the county every single year. And I think we demonstrated that we'd got a plan and some ambition, and we were quite well organised, and most leagues want teams like that on board. And we managed by, begging more than anything, managed to fight our way in, and they gave us an opportunity, and we haven't looked back from then, really.
I'm thinking enthusiasm probably helped there, and it clearly wasn't just a drunken idea that gained momentum. It had some proper thought behind it. You had two promotions in the Kent County League, and you were looking further ahead, and you applied to the FA to jump up the leagues, and last summer you joined the Southern Counties East League Division 1. I mean, how did all that come about?
Right time, right place, really. So, yeah, we've had 5 promotions in 3 years, which, you know, technically shouldn't be possible, I suppose. And that's what some people would argue. Yeah, combination, because we were a small club, going to all the meetings, getting to know the referees and the league officers, you hear rumours on the grapevine, and just like managers know loads and loads of players. I know all of the officials behind the scenes. We heard about the restructure of the pyramids very, very early, and we put plans in place to try and make sure that we've got floodlights, because there aren't many clubs in our area that have. And by doing that alone, on top of the other things that we'd already got in place, just by having floodlights, it gave us an opportunity to apply for a level that many, many other clubs can't. I think even if you've got the best players on the pitch, it does become a little bit of a ceiling, where if you haven't got the facilities and certainly the floodlights that obviously need planning permission, you will get to a point where you can't really progress any further. So we made the effort to grab an opportunity that came up at Bayliss Avenue at Thameslade, and we moved in there. And then once we put the application forward, just making sure that it was professional and organised, and as you say, making it clear that it wasn't just a drunken idea, that we had actually planned things properly. And again, we got given an opportunity, just like the Kent County League gave us an opportunity. The FA gave us a similar opportunity. And we've gone straight into the Southern Counties, and we wanted to make sure that getting there, we proved that we were worth being moved up the ladder. And hopefully with what happened last Saturday, we have proven that.
Well, yeah, you mentioned just last Saturday. Yeah, I mean, only wrapping up the title at Step 6, so Division 1 there on the final game of the season. It sends you into Step 5 for the summer. And, I mean, if you had time to think about it and reflect on what it all means, to that idea that you had a few years back, and obviously lots of effort and lots of work gone into it, but, I mean, what you've already achieved, you're going to be playing at Step 5 in the football pyramid next season.
Yeah, it does seem quite surreal. I didn't really want to tempt fate last week by thinking what it meant. A lot of leagues have obviously been wrapped up 2 or 3 weeks ago. Ours has gone right down to the wire. We've been pushed all the way by 2 or 3 other clubs that are capable of making that jump as well, and hopefully they do in the near future. Last Friday and certainly Saturday morning on the way to the game on the coach and in the first half when it was a bit windy and things weren't really going on our way, I can't say that I enjoyed it an awful lot, but the second half and obviously the celebrations and the rest of the weekend and the couple of days since then have been really enjoyable. Everybody's really, really excited. I'm really pleased for the players and the management for what they've achieved. But looking ahead at next year, some of those clubs that we're going to be playing in the FA Cup, the histories and the support that they've got, to think that 2-3 years ago we didn't even exist. It hasn't sunk in at all. I'm sure on the opening day of next season or when the FA Cup draw gets done and we see our name there, I'm sure it'll seem a little bit more real.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned some of the big names in there. Already on this show this season, we've spoken with Cray Valley Paper Mills and Canterbury City from their FA Vars run. It's a massive names in there that people in non-league will know. Is it a season to find your feet and consolidate?
I'm not going to stop being ambitious, but at the same time, I want to be realistic. But I think in our very, very short history, we have always surprised people, and I'd like to think that we can do that again next year. So I don't have any expectations at this stage. I know that Louis, the manager, really wants us to be competitive in that division, and I'm sure that we will be. But there are some big clubs there that have got deep pockets, and we wouldn't want to be disrespectful. I'm just glad that we can be a part of that, whatever next season may bring, because, there has been a lot of hard work to get us there, and I'd like to think that we deserve it. I want to make sure that we continue to be as successful as possible, because the short time we've been around, we haven't really had any blips. We've always won trophies. We'll surprise people. I've got no doubt about that.
Yeah, I'd like to think you've gone about it the right way, as well. My old school friend Danny Wakelin, manager down at Kent Football United in Division One, where you've just
I know Danny.
Value his footballing opinions, but also value his opinions of people as well. And said you were a great bloke, so it's clear that it's quite easy for a club like you to have upset a few people, really, because there's always a little bit of envy maybe from other clubs for success. But you've climbed up, you've maybe jumped up a few stages, but you seem to have done it the right way. I said you're more than a Sunday side. You've got an up-to-date website. You've got a YouTube channel. You've got the reserve side led by our old friend of the show, Tristan Cropley, I believe. You set up, advertising for the academy. You've still got a Sunday side, club merchandise. You're a football club. I mentioned fast track at the start, but you're sort of you've been grown in a petri dish and sort of done everything faster. But you've done it the right way.
Well, I mean, you get to know a lot of people involved with football, and when I see something that another club is doing that I think is good, it sticks in the memory. And when you see other people doing things that don't work, you try and learn from it. And we want to make sure that there are development opportunities within our club for players that are younger. We've got 22 youth sides moving over to play under our umbrella next year, from under 14 and under 15. There's plenty of players in that age group that have represented the county this year. The under-14s that are moving over are won the Kent Cup a couple of weeks ago. There's a business plan in place. Running a football club is is running a business, really, and it has to be bigger than just the first team. And certainly when you do get to the level that we are going to be at next year, you need to have that consistent conveyor belt of players that are coming through. And then off the pitch, I mean, the first thing the players say to me after games is, you know, when's the highlights out and can I do the interview? And, you know, we've got a decent quality match programme and stuff. We try and make the whole environment for players and hopefully floating spectators that we're starting to pick up, trying to make it as professional as possible, and it's paid off so far.
And what about bodies on the ground? Because we've spoken to other clubs recently where they're just struggling for volunteers. Are you able to pull upon a group of people? You said it was yourself and some friends to start up the football club. So has that been a good base for you to build upon?
The friends that set the club up, for one reason or another, are not around any longer. Two of them played, one of them's moved out of the area. So myself and my partner and Tristan, who you mentioned earlier, does a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And that's it, really, apart from the managers of the individual sides. The actual committee side of things is basically two or three people. So we do have to work pretty hard, but, you know, we're not afraid of doing that. And all the time that it pays off on the pitch, it makes that hard work worthwhile. But that can't continue indefinitely. I think groundhoppers and spectators and people that we've got to know over the last year through jumping the ladder, where you are in the limelight a little bit more, they see the effort that we're putting in, and, you know, they take a bit of a shine to our club as a result. We've had groundhoppers from Dorset and Manchester and things like that come all the way down to watch little old Wellington, because they've heard about them, read about them somewhere and thought, what on earth's going on? And yeah, we've had a lot of well wishes from people that you wouldn't have expected from 12 months ago. So long may that continue. But yeah, we're always, there's an open door policy. I don't think there's any shortage of people in South East London and Kent that like football. If you're one of those people that helps behind the scenes, and pick the phone up and get in touch, because we will need more people like that in the future.
Yeah, I mean, so many clubs across the levels, they dream, they've got desires, they want to achieve, but you've been able to put that all into action and make it work. Is it just hard work? Is that the magic ingredient for you guys to be successful?
Well, you make your own luck, I think, to a degree. You know, there are clubs in the Kent County League that have got floodlights that could have applied to join the non-league pyramid, and for one reason or another decided not to because they didn't want to commit to the travel, or they didn't want to commit to the finance or midweek fixtures. You know, that's not something that you have to worry about when you're playing county football. We wanted to progress. We made the effort to progress. And yeah, we did get a little bit lucky. But there's plenty of opportunity out there. If you are running a football club and you're not prepared to put in the hard work, then, you know, you're only going to get so far. Sounds a bit of a cliche, but, you know, hard work and giving 100% should be the minimum requirement off the pitch, as well as what a manager would demand of a player on the pitch.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier on about taking part in the FA Cup for the first time next season, hopefully. Now, obviously, the club, your brainchild, it's spinning from all your input. We spoke to John Maguire, the secretary, up at Squires Gate last week. At 59, he managed to come off the bench over Easter and play. Is there a chance that we might, if you're in the FA Cup, we might see you getting signed on and coming off the bench?
No, well, our first team manager, Louis, named himself on the bench last Saturday. And, yeah, we had to put a stop to that quite quickly. I know exactly what he was planning. But, no, there is absolutely zero chance of me making any kind of cameo, even for the Sunday morning team, let alone in any kind of FA Cup match. You know, we do try to be professional. And I get my enjoyment from being a glorified spectator. You know, my granddad used to take me to watch Welling United as a little boy, and it's just stuck. And what I'm doing now, for all the hard work that's involved, you know, I'm a spectator that has a really enjoyable Saturday and is a little bit more close-knit with players that you don't get in the professional game. But my playing days, I don't do my playing days were ever here, but they're certainly not here anymore.
And obviously, I said about, you know, trying to get people involved in their local club. You've already mentioned that there's an open door if people want to get involved in your club. What about if people are maybe contemplating getting involved in a club and taking it like you have? Any advice? And what are the pitfalls that you've learned that maybe you could pass on to other people?
Good question. You know, we've had a lot of clubs over the last 18 months that have posed just that, and it's difficult to explain in a very couple of sentences, you know, everything that we've been through in the last year or two. But you need to get on side with league officers and FA officers and referees and people behind the scenes, because ultimately a lot of these decisions are made in a meeting room or a boardroom somewhere. And if you are a club that is well respected, and if you are an individual that is well thought of, and you can demonstrate that you're ambitious and organised and professional, then most people would give you an opportunity if you asked for one. But if you don't conduct yourself in the right manner and you don't ask for that opportunity, then you probably won't get it. So, you know, keep banging on the door. But, get to know the right people and make your ambitions known, because there's a lot of clubs out there that I'm sure do want to progress. But, you know, there's no point talking about it in the changing room. You need to make sure that the leagues that you're involved with and the people that make these decisions are aware that if an opportunity comes up, you're one of the people that would want to take it. Because there are a lot of clubs that are quite happy playing at the level that they're at and don't want to move forward. So if you do want to progress, you have to let people know about it.
It's that big word, isn't it? I think it's probably why we all got involved in non-league football. It respect, and it works both ways. I mentioned Danny Wakely, and at school we had drilled into us 3M, manners maketh man. And it's why I love non-league, because I get to speak to chairman, I get to speak to players, I get to speak to managers. And it's just a different ethic that maybe the professional game's lost a bit higher up.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up living next door to Welland United captain in the 80s. And, you know, to me, that was, as a little boy, that was like living next to David Beckham. So, non-league football, you've got that environment where players move around a lot, managers move around a lot. And Danny, who you mentioned, I know well. Ironically, my Sunday team are playing at Kent Football United this season, where he's currently first team manager. You've got to conduct yourself in the right way if you want to fulfil your ambitions. And I'm hoping that we can continue doing that next year.
Well, you've certainly been doing it so far. Kevin Oakes, chairman at Wellington, congratulations on another great season.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. And we'll look forward to watching your progress next season.
Yeah, keep an eye out for us. You never know what might happen. Thank you. Spend some time.
So just time then to head on over to the Non-League Paper Towers, and back with us this week, the online editor at the Non-League Paper, David Richardson. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you?
Well, I'm good, and it's we've got to the end of the season, but there's no end to drama, is it? Is there? We'll start with the weekend and some last day title wins up and down the period. None bigger than Lake Norrien leaving non-league and heading back to the Football League, as we suspected, but, you know, it's nice that they wrapped it up.
Yeah, great for in front of a crowd of over 8,000 there. It was sort of expected in the end, given the final day scenarios, but I've got to admit, I didn't expect them to do it. Salford were my pick from the beginning, and then, you know, looking at the two run-ins of both of the clubs, I thought Salford were going to pick them to it, but no, great for Orient, and Justin Edwards done a really good job there. Of course, they could do the double this season. They've got the FA Trophy final to come in a couple of weeks at Wembley. So, a remarkable season for Orient, and good to see them back in the league. Non-league will miss them, I think, but they are a Football League club. I'm sure they'll continue to progress in the league under Justin Edwards.
Yeah, you only have to look at the success Luton Town had this week as well. And clubs that go up now seem to be very well prepared for the Football League.
Yeah, I think there's a stat that there's no team has ever gone up into League Two and then immediately come straight back down. Obviously, Macclesfield are in a little bit of danger of that, although, you know, their sort of off-field problems have been quite well documented in the last sort of year and previously. But no, I obviously Luton just this week reaching the Championship. It's amazing. It seems not too long ago that they were winning the National League. You have to look at Tranmere, have only recently gone up, who are amongst the playoffs, Forest Green as well. Of course, Lincoln, who have won promotion this season, are now in League One. It does go to show that, you know, the clubs that are in the National League, if they sort themselves out and they go up, they're likely to stay there and if not go home.
Yeah, and that, another one of those last-day winners at Weymouth. When we spoke to Mark Molesey several weeks back, I think they could have wrapped it up at that weekend, and then they had a stutter, didn't they? But they managed to wrap that one up, the Premier Southern Premier South there. And another big name heading into the National South for next season.
Yeah, very nearly messed it up right at the last. It sort of seemed like they only needed a win for weeks, and eventually it went down to the final day.
Well, I think you went down to the second half as well, didn't you? I think at half time, you're then wondering how do you pick your team up that have been at the top at the end there, and then move them into the playoffs. But they got over the line. And then talking about the playoffs, I mean, it wouldn't be the end of the season without controversy, would it? First of all, Concord Rangers are unable to take part in the National South playoffs, which appeared to come as a shock to everybody, including manager Sammy Moore and his coaching staff, who's since departed.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shock that Concord, I think given the timing of it, obviously ground grading requirements always done at the end of March, and you know this was I think sort of 2 days before the end of the season when this came out. Obviously gutting for Sammy Moore and the players there who you know had a really good season. It sort of almost goes forgotten that they had a points deduction as well and managed to still cling on for a playoff place. I think it's a difficult one, really, because I think, you know, obviously Sammy Moore's left now and, you know, you wonder whether that's as a result of what has happened. I'm not sure, although the statement was strange in the sense that it said that he had been asked to step down. So you wonder what has gone on there. But no, a great shame for Concord. But I think the right decision was made in giving the fourth place team the advantage into the semi-final. I think a couple of years ago we had the situation where Paul finished in fifth, and this was at the time when it was just the standard second to fifth playoff places. Paul had the same issue with their ground requirements, and then it went to sixth place Hungerford, who also couldn't get in because of their ground, and then in the end it was Hampton in seventh that got into the playoffs. And you know, at the time people were saying, well, how is it right that a team in seventh could go on to win promotion? And I do like the new extended playoffs, you know, adding sixth and seventh place in, although obviously again the same arguments of people saying, you know, should these clubs be winning promotion over someone who finishes second? But I think, you know, going lower down than that to eighth or, you know, even ninth, if it was to come to that in this situation, I don't think it was right. And it was better to give the advantage to fourth place.
Yeah, and then we talk about the playoffs. The playoffs in the Southern Central Premier Division or not at the time of recording.
Yeah, it's been a crazy few days for the Southern Premier Central. Stratford Town were called in front of the FA for allegedly fielding an ineligible player. Those games were supposed to take place on Wednesday of this week. On Tuesday, the Stratford game, which is being played at King's Inn, was postponed. As a result, the other game between Alf Church was postponed as well. And since then, we've had about four different days as to when these games football were going to be played. At first it was Friday, and then it got moved back to Thursday, and then it went to Monday, and then today it's gone to Sunday, and now I think Kingsland and Stratford will be playing on Saturday. You know, it really is a complete farce, and to be honest, I do stand up for the leagues and the FA a lot of the time with different issues, but to be honest, with this one, I just, you know, it really is a mess and quite embarrassing, to be honest. You know, and the people that suffer are the clubs and the players who have to take time off work and have to prepare, and you know, it's a long old season, and then suddenly you're sort of getting messed around in the final week. It's a far from ideal situation, and of course it means that now, because the games have been pushed back, the result is that the Step 3 Super Playoff, which takes place next Saturday, you know, the Southern Central winners will have much less time to prepare because their final is going to be played next Wednesday, so they'll only have 3 days compared to the Northern Premier League winner, who will play their final this weekend. So, you know, it's come at a cost for everyone, really. And a great shame and a little bit of a sour way to finish the season.
Well, that's it. As you say, it impacts on everybody. And yeah, obviously being involved on the league side of things, I normally fall on the league side as well, because I know how hard these people work. But yeah, hopefully there's lessons going to be learned here, because I'm not sure what the solutions are. But I think the ineligible player was something like February time, wasn't it? I think that this all stems from. And I mean, how many times have we said that the rest of the world seems to work on an up-to-date you know, moment by moment, a database and that sort of thing, and we just need that support within the game of football. So, as you say, your players are taking time off work. It's also fans; they're trying to plan. It could be the biggest game that they're ever going to attend for their club. They want to be there, but if you don't know where it is, you're trying to plan your travel and things like that. It does just leave a sour taste in your mouth. But hopefully it's going to get sorted. And, maybe the positive is those players that have got less time to recover for the Super Playoff are going to be more geared up for it. I don't know. There's always a plus and a minus on both sides. But obviously we do know a number of clubs now through to the playoff finals in their respective divisions. And you know, as you've already alluded to, it's not always the clubs that have finished second or third that are through to these finals. It's the ones that come good on the day.
Yeah, it is. Just speaking to some of the managers involved in the finals this week, who have been talking about the big finals. They say it's, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. It's just whoever turns up on the day and who's best on the day. And that really is probably the attraction of the playoffs for neutrals and fans, I suppose. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen. It's cut football in the sense that you know, there's no second chances. And they do throw up some really, really good games. We've seen some great ones this week already. You know, I always think the playoffs are going to be quite tight and scrappy, and there won't be much between. But there's been loads of goals so far, which is great to see. And it's you know, the season may be over, but it's such a busy time with all the playoff games and all the various permutations. Particularly at step three with the Super Playoffs, but also at step four with the points per game scenario and the clubs that can and can't be promoted going into those games.
Yeah, and then you mentioned talking to managers, and breaking news, as we're talking here, Aldershot Town have made a change, and Gary Waddock has left by mutual consent.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it was a really tough season for Aldershot, on the back of two seasons getting into the playoffs. You know, suddenly they've been relegated out of the National League, which has come as quite a big shock. But at the same time, I think last summer they lost a lot of their key players. And even for a manager like Gary Waddock, he just couldn't replace them on a bit of a reduced budget this year. Coupled with that, they had some horrible injuries throughout the season. I think, you know, several times they're only naming three players on the bench, and you know, it was just one of those things where the situation just seems to get worse and worse. I think maybe a little bit surprised they've not kept Gary Waddock on. I think a lot of their fans were maybe of the opinion that his time was up. But for me, I always think, you know, and a manager who's so experienced as he is, you know, he's worth sticking with regardless of whether they're in the National South or the National League, which they could well be, should, you know, there'd be problems with Ebbsfleet or Gateshead in the next few months before the AGM. So, yeah, a shame for Gary Waddock. I'm sure he'll get back in somewhere. But it'll be interesting to see who Aldershot appoint now. You know, there's some good names out there like Jay Saunders and Daryl McMahon and Sammy Moore who, you know, I'm sure might be putting their CVs in. I don't know. But, you know, there are options out there for them.
Yeah, and it's very interesting, as you mentioned there, about Gateshead, because this week as well, we've seen the fans meeting and taking control of their Twitter account, and it seemingly is moving from bad to worse at Gateshead, with the fans voting this week to set up a new supporter-owned club. So there's a good chance that Gateshead might not be playing in the National League next season.
Yeah, such a shame to see what's going on at Gateshead throughout the season, really. Obviously, this week, the club has sacked all of their full-time staff, and that all came by email. You know, a manager like Ben Clark, you know, the great press guys there, Dominic, who we know through the non-league paper. Yeah, it's awful to see, but obviously the fans now feel like they just can't follow their club anymore, which is such a great shame, and are looking at setting up a Phoenix club effectively. You know, and it's just, you know, such a shame. You know, for Gateshead and for non-league, really, when you see things like this, and yeah, of course, we're not sure what the knock-on effects will be in terms of their participation in the National League going forward, but it doesn't look good.
It doesn't look good, and I said it's the end of the season. Now, obviously, we knew there were going to be the playoffs, so plenty to write about, but it seems to be the busiest time of the year, David. So, what can we expect in the non-league paper this weekend?
Well, it's a big playoff special this week. Obviously, we've got all the playoff games from Friday night and also Saturday. And also, we'll be previewing all the games that are to come on Sunday and Monday as well. So, plenty of match action in all big feature games with pictures as well. So, if you're a fan of one of those clubs, get out there and try and support the paper, because there's still plenty in there. Trust me, it's been, seemingly these last couple of weeks have been some of the busiest we've had, even though the season was almost over and now is over.
Well, David, we look forward to reading all about it on Sunday's non-league paper, and thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Tim.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you, as ever, to all of our guests, and a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season, share the show, and join in the debate throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson at DaveAnderson78 and myself at Tim Fuel. So, Dave, a quieter week ahead, lots of planning, strategy, and.
Yeah, I've got. I'm having a weekend off. The guys are in, but I'm leaving them alone. I'm going to play some golf. And then we go into our schedule. And if things work out, we'll be taking the show to Chertsey next week. So that'll be good. I'm looking forward to that if we get that arranged.
Yeah, a slightly shorter journey home for me. I'll start feeling like Paul Doswell, you know, working a bit closer to home.
And obviously Kevin and Cray will be represented as well. I've insisted on that, Kevin, if you're listening.
Oh, well, yeah, staying in contact with everybody. It's going to be a... It's going to be a massive weekend of football.
Wow, yeah, playoffs. We haven't even talked about the playoffs.
There's so much going on and not going on. So it's difficult to keep current with various playoffs being delayed and things like that. Yeah. But we'll have a proper roundup, hopefully, next week.
Next week
and sort of, you know, in case people haven't followed it, who's going up?
Yeah. And by then, who knows what may have happened with various clubs in state of flux. Of course, you remember that you can listen every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Spotify, TuneIn Radio. You can listen via your smart speakers and podcast aggregation sites. Best of luck to all of those that are still involved in the playoffs and various other cup competitions.
And get well soon, Jonathan North, who had a bad injury, was taken to hospital in the playoff game against Bath.
I believe he'd even come back off holiday early to play in the playoff. Because Wealdstone literally qualified at the last minute for that playoff. Yeah.
I think the player involved in the collision went to see him in hospital. Again, the proper thing to do, you know, respect it to that as well.
Yeah, a player that we've known for many a year and a proper non-league legend, I think, already. So, get well soon to Jonathan. And, good luck to everybody this week. And we'll speak to you again soon. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.